You know, when we try to figure the value of something, is something really valuable? We try to fix a dollar amount to it. If it's very valuable, if it's something that has a great deal of quality, it costs more money. And so we take the jump or make the jump that people who have a lot of money have the things that are of the best quality, the things that are the most valuable. If a person is very wealthy, has a lot of money, then really he has it all. In fact, today we went to a Chinese restaurant for lunch, and I think it was Seth, got a fortune cookie which says, "Wealth gives the ability to fully experience life." That word wealth, what popped in your mind? Was it money? Well, since it's a fortune cookie, probably money popped in. Isn't that the idea that a lot of people have in this world? If you are going to fully experience life, I mean really enjoy life, money. Money is the key. Money has basically become the god of many people in our society, especially in American society, especially the United States of America. You go to other countries, and that's how they look at us. They look at us as very wealthy, but they also look at us as very materialistic. They see us as having money at the center of our lives. That is what's most important to us. That's where we spend most of our time, acquiring more money. I was on the plane not long ago and was talking to an older woman about some problems. Particularly, she was talking about problems that young families had. And she said, "I believe that young families, that the problems that they have center in money." And I was thinking, well, yeah, money is a huge problem. It's one of the main reasons why divorce takes place in many couples is because of arguments about money. So I was, you know, just kind of, I was ready to amen what she was saying. And she says, "Yep, if they just had more of it, they'd be a whole lot happier. Money is their problem. They need to get more." And it just floored me, especially from an older, more mature individual who you would think by time of experience would know that, can money really buy anything? Well, I'd like to look this evening at some things money doesn't buy, won't buy. And as we go through this, please, I mean, we're in the midst of this culture that has such a love affair with money, it's hard for us not to get caught up in it. Think about yourself. Think about how you value money. I couldn't help but be struck with the song that we just sang. Em did a great job leading it, and it's a great song. I'm satisfied with just a cottage below, a little silver and a little gold. Are we? I mean, really? Where is money in our lives? How do we really value the things that money buys, or do we value the things that money can't buy? So, number one, and incidentally, this is going to be a no PowerPoint presentation. It's just me and you here. We're just eye to eye here. We have to stay awake, see, look here. Yes. Number one, you can't buy a good reputation. You can't buy friends. You can't buy a good name. Open with me in the book of Proverbs, chapter 22. Proverbs, chapter 22, and verse 1. The wise writer says, "A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold." Now here is a man, Solomon, talk about writing fortune cookies. This isn't a fortune cookie because this is from God. This is wisdom that he was blessed with by the providence of God, by the gift of God. And through that wisdom, he makes this observation that a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. He's making a contrast here. So in other words, when you have to make a choice, choose a good name because you can't buy a good name. If you choose riches, you're not going to be able to, with those riches, buy a good name necessarily inferred. And we all, don't we all really want to be respected? You listen to men as they talk, and they're going to talk about things that they're doing, things that they're competent in, things that they have talent in, because they want to be respected. You listen to women talk, and they talk about things that are valuable to them, things that they care about, relationships that they have, because they want to be valued as well. They want to be respected. They want to have friends who acknowledge that. But you can't buy that with money. Now, let's go to a New Testament passage in the book of Luke, the 15th chapter, because Jesus tells a parable of a young man who tries, I think, to buy a good name. He tries to buy some friends. He tries to take a shortcut. And the shortcut really doesn't help him too much. You remember the parable that Jesus tells in chapter 15 of Luke. Here's a young man who wants his inheritance early, before his dad dies. And his dad gives it to him, and he goes off into a far country. And we'll pick up the reading here in verse 13. It says, "Not many days after, the young man gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there he wasted his possessions with prodigal living." So he has money, and he's using that money. He's spending that money. Now, when he comes back, the older brother apparently has heard about what he's doing. And notice how he comments on it in verse 30, same chapter, Luke chapter 15, verse 30. "But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you kill the fatted calf for him." Apparently, this young man was in this far country, and he was buying his friends. That's what a harlot is, right? Somebody that you buy, somebody that gives you physical affection because you're willing to give her some money. Well, it's not just those who are willing to do sexual favors that are harlots. There are other individuals that, yes, you can take this shortcut. Yes, as long as you've got the money. Yes, as long as you're giving the gifts, they're going to be your bud. They're going to be your friend. We see that all around us. You know, you think about in school, you think about the popular people. Everybody wants to be their friends. You think about the young couples that everybody flocks to. Everybody wants to be their friends. Now, when you thought of that popular person, when you thought of that young couple, what did you think of? You think of wealth. You think of, well, they've got money. They wear the nicest clothes. They drive the nicest cars. They've got the nicest house. They got the nicest stuff. And they can buy. They can be popular, right? They can have all these people around it. But what are they buying? Are they really buying friendship? Are they really buying respect? Are they really buying a good name? Well, look at what happens to this young man here, verse 14. "But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in the land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine." Now this is a Jewish young man, and he's feeding pigs, unclean animals, things that he would not have anything to do with if he was self-respecting. But he's lost his self-respect. We continue there in verse 16. "And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything." Where are the harlots? Where are the people that he bought with that money? Where are all of his friends that were all around him? I'm sure they were all around him when he had all of this, when he had all this money. Now all of a sudden his money runs out, and he really never had any true friends to start with. You can't buy friends with money. Matter of fact, if you are going to be respected, if you are going to have a good name, if you are really going to have friendships and develop those friendships, it's going to come because you've earned them because of your character, because you've made the right choices. Think for just a moment, if you would, go to the book of 1 Timothy chapter 3 and think about the elders. Elders are individuals who have a good name. They are respected. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, you have the qualifications of the elders. How many qualifications of the elders are there that say that a man must be rich in order to be an elder? How much money does a man have to be an elder? You know, a lot of times we, perhaps, if we're thinking about this world's riches rather than the riches of God, we might look at a man who's a good businessman. You know, money talks. Good businessman. That's who the politicians are listening to, a good businessman. He's the mover and shaker. He's the one that's going to get his way. He's the one that people are gravitating to, right? Well, not in God's system. There is not a single qualification that says anything about a man must have a lot of money. It doesn't say that he has to have a little bit of money. As a matter of fact, it doesn't talk about money at all, except, well, look at verse 3. Not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. Well, the only thing that it says about money is that it is not his God. You have a man who has money as his God, and he does not value the things that he's supposed to value. There are more important things than that. Notice in the book of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, he's talking about those who lead, those who are elders or those who are the leaders within a group. He says in verse 12, 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 12, "And we urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you and who are over you in the Lord, and admonish you to," now notice what you're to give them, "esteem them very highly." That's respect, isn't it? That's a good name, isn't it? Esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. That's how a man gains value. That's how a man or woman gains respect. And that is by working for it, by earning it, by demonstrating that they are someone of good character. Same book, chapter 2. Not just the elders, but evangelists as well. Paul talked about his motivations and how he tried to influence people in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 4. He says, "But as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, even so we speak not as pleasing men, but God who trusts our heart." That's what was important to Paul. He says, "For neither at any time did we use flattering words, as you know, or a cloak for covetousness, God is witness." Paul did not try to win friends and influence people with the flashy clothes that he wore, with the money that he threw around. He tried to do so with the gospel of Jesus Christ. He did so with his true love and concern with people. Look at verse 7. He says, "But we were gentle among you as a nursing mother cherishes her own children, so affectionately longing for you. We were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become dear to us." This is how the Apostle Paul helped to gain respect in the eyes of others for the gospel of Jesus Christ, is to take himself out of it and just be a servant to all. Notice in the book of Luke, the 9th chapter, think about the man who is the most respected, the most influential man in the history of the world. I would submit that it's Jesus Christ. The most influential, the most respected man in the history of the world. And notice how he describes himself in Luke chapter 9 and verse 58. Luke 9:58. Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." The most influential man, but a man who, physically speaking, had nothing, had no riches. The point is, we cannot elevate money to a place that it does not deserve. Money cannot buy a reputation. It cannot buy friends. It cannot buy respect. The only way for us to receive those is to, rather than valuing the money, we value the character that God honors and values, and we will earn those things. Well, another thing that money does not buy, and that is a good mate. If you would go to the Old Testament, to the book of Proverbs, chapter 31, talk about a good woman first, and then we'll talk about a good man. Proverbs, the very last book of Proverbs. It's interesting that it is the last book. You know, if you're trying to get people to remember something, you either say it first or you say it last. Sometimes what's in the middle gets lost. So the wise writer leaves Proverbs 31, the last book, I mean the last chapter, the last section of this book, to talk about a woman that has a great deal of value. Notice in verse 10, Proverbs chapter 31, he says, "Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies." Now, if her worth is far above rubies, how many rubies does it take to buy her? I mean, isn't it necessarily inferred, you can't buy this wife. This wife is in another category, in another classification of value. You cannot value the rubies and this precious wife, this virtuous wife, on the same plane because she exceeds that. You cannot buy her with money. She is a woman, as we continue there in verse 11, the heart of her husband trusts her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and no evil all the days of her life. This is a woman who is trustworthy, a woman that he can put his confidence in. She seeks wool and flax, willing to work with her own hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. And he goes on describing this woman who's industrious, who's hardworking. He talks about in verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. She is someone who is hospitable. She is not self-centered, only thinking about herself. How do you get such a woman? How do you find such a wife? What is going to attract this woman? Well, how does it describe her husband? Verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Does that say anything about how much money he has? Does that say her husband is someone who is the most, the richest, the one with the most gold in all of the countryside? That's the man, because, well, only a man like that's going to get a woman like that. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about a man who's respected. He's talking about a man who apparently values character and values hard work and values godliness and values dignity. If a man values those things, then that's the kind of woman that he's going to seek for. And if a woman values those things, that's the kind of man that she is going to look for. A lot of times guys are looking for a wonderful wife, and they go about it by trying to buy her, wanting to have all of the nicest clothes, wanting to drive the fastest car, wanting to give the nicest gifts. If I can just get more money, if I can just pile that upon her, then that's what's going to attract this beautiful, this virtuous woman. No, not in reality. You cannot buy a good woman. I remember I think it was the second date Martha and I went on. We went to a Chinese restaurant. I had not been to this restaurant before, but we went there. And when we got there, it was not really exactly what we were looking for, but we went in there anyway, and we ate the food, and it really wasn't as good as what we were hoping for, but we ate the food. But the reason why we went there is because I had a coupon. Now, she learned a lot about me that day, and she could have run, and has brought that up several times since that point as well. But I learned a lot about her as well. What's important to a woman who is a virtuous woman is not the things that you can buy for her, but the value, hopefully, of the character that you have. That's what she values. And the same thing, I think, is true of a man. Let's go to the New Testament in 1 Peter chapter 3. What is it, if you are a lady who is looking for a good man, a good mate to have, what is it that you can do to attract this man? Well, I think Peter gives us a good indication in 1 Peter chapter 3. We'll read here verses 3 and 4. When he's talking to the wife, and he says, "Do not let your beauty be that outward adorning of arranging of hair, of wearing gold, or of putting on a fine apparel, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible ornament of a gentle and quiet spirit." Notice this next phrase here, "which is very precious in the sight of God." What does God value in a woman? God values Not the ornaments, not the beauty that's outside, not the nicest hair or the nicest clothes. What he values is what's on the inside. And if a man is godly, if a man is following after the things of God, if a man values the honor and respect and dignity that God so honors, then that's what's going to be attractive to that kind of man. That's how we can find someone who is really a good mate, a good fit for us, by valuing the things of God. Money cannot buy a good mate. Well, another thing money can't buy is happiness. Let's go to the New Testament again, to the book of Luke in the 12th chapter. Jesus talks about a man that had a lot of stuff, but doesn't seem like his stuff made his happiness very deep. In verse 16 of Luke chapter 12, Luke 12 verse 16, Jesus tells a parable saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully, and he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?' And he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. There I will store all of my crops and my goods, and I will say to my soul, so you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.'" How deep was this man's happiness? How deep was that? Well, it was as deep as his stuff. But the problem is, what happens if rats get into those barns and eat it up? What happens if he gets into a bad deal and has a dishonest businessman who squanders some of those things that he has? What happens if there's an earthquake or there's a tornado or some other natural disaster that comes through and wipes it all out? What happens if he loses his health? Or, as Jesus points out, what happens if he dies? How deep is that merriment? How deep is that happiness? It's only as deep as the value of the money. And unfortunately, that's not very deep at all. You know, Solomon talked about this in the Old Testament. If you would go back to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 2. Solomon was a very, very rich man. And he talked about all of the riches that he had in chapter 2, Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Beginning with verse 3, when he says, "I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guided my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see," now here's his purpose, "till I might see what is good for the sons of men to do under the heaven all the days of their life." What is the purpose of life is what Solomon is looking for. And so he searches in stuff, in riches. Is that going to buy him happiness? He says in verse 4, "I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards. I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants. I had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds," excuse me, "and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and special treasures of kings and of provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, musical instruments of all kinds. I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor." Now here is a man who really, truly had riches, more riches than any of us have seen, experienced in our own lives, and probably have seen anyone experience in our sphere of association. Solomon is sitting at the top of the world as far as riches goes. Verse 11, "Then I looked at all of my works and my hands had done, and on the labor which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun." He said, it's just empty. mean, even if you've got all this stuff, even if you are able to enjoy it, just like this fortune cookie says, wealth gives you the ability to fully experience life. And Solomon said, I had all this wealth and I'm experiencing all this stuff and I'm empty. It's not here. I'm grasping for the wind. There is no profit. Money cannot buy happiness. Now, we looked last week at Psalm 1. And let's just jump back there for just a moment. The first Psalm, beginning with verse 1. Blessed is the man, happy is the man, joyful is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the seat in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But what is it that brings happiness to this man? How is it that he finds satisfaction? But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. You want to find true happiness. You want to find true satisfaction. Don't look for it in what you can purchase with your money. Even people that have had great amounts of money, Solomon, Donald Trump, you hear him talk, he says, it's not in the accumulation of things that brings him happiness. He says, it's the acquiring. It's the high that I get when I get more and more stuff. But what happens to Donald Trump once he gets high after getting more and more stuff? He wants to get more and more stuff. He wants to get that high. He's never satisfied. The psalm writer says, you want to be satisfied, then go for something that is much more valuable than what you can buy with this money. The things of this earth are temporary. The things of God are eternal. The things of this life are superficial. The things of the Spirit have depth. The flesh is always wanting. The Spirit can be satisfied. Money brings brief pleasure. But going for the things, valuing the things that have to do with our relationship with God, that's where eternal joy comes from. Money cannot buy happiness. And the last thing we'll note is that money cannot buy our approval from God. Notice in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, the 17th chapter, Acts chapter 17, Paul is talking to the people of Athens on Mars Hill. He sees that they are very religious, but religiously wrong. And so he educates them. He wants to tell them about the true God. And describing him, this true God, he says, Acts chapter 17 and verse 24, God who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with man's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life and breath and all things. He makes the point that God made everything. God has made all of us. God has given us all things. So if God made everything and God gives us all good gifts, what can we possibly give to God that's going to buy our approval? What do we have that's valuable? If God owns everything, if He owns every tree on every hill and owns every hill on every continent and owns every continent on this world, no matter what we could amass, all of the gold and silver, what could we give God to gain approval? But you know, men have been trying to do that for centuries. Back here in Acts chapter 17, the Apostle Paul, I'm sure, when he was on Mars Hill, could look, and right there is the Parthenon. The Parthenon is built with these beautiful temples with the best things that man has. Why? To buy approval, so that their gods could look favorably upon them. And they would bring sacrifices of great gold, silver, great amounts of physical value so that they could buy the approval of their God, so that God would be favorable to them. And Paul says, God doesn't value those things. Well, what does He value? Well, go back to the Old Testament, if you would, to the book of Psalms, the 51st Psalm. David, who was a king, who could have given great riches to God, to find pleasure in the eyes of God, does not give him great riches in order to find the approval of God. Notice in the 51st Psalm, and we will read verses 16 and 17, where David, when he is confessing his sin that he committed with Bathsheba and looking for the approval of God, he confesses that, and he says in verse 16 of the 51st Psalm, "For you do not desire sacrifice, or else I would give it. You do not delight in burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart. These, O God, you will despise." It's our hearts God is looking for. It's us that He's looking for. It's our repentance. It's our change that He's looking for. It's our sorrow for our sin. That's what is valuable to God. Not the money that we might give unto God. You cannot buy the approval of God with money. Yes, money has its place here on the earth. But when you're talking about things that have real value, you have to go beyond this earth to the spiritual realm. And those are the things that have real, lasting value. Money can buy a house, but it cannot buy a home. Money can buy a bed. It cannot buy sleep. Money can buy a clock, but it cannot buy time. Money can buy a book, but it cannot buy knowledge. Money can buy medicine, but it cannot buy health. Money can buy blood, but it cannot buy life. Money can buy friends, but it cannot buy respect. Money can buy a person to marry, but it cannot buy a good mate. Money can buy pleasure, but it cannot buy happiness. Money can buy religion, but it cannot buy the approval of God. We know this, right? I mean, think about our lives. We know this, right? It's so easy to get caught up in this life, get caught up in the rat race, get caught up acquiring more and more stuff, valuing everything that we have on how much money it costs. We know this, right? Let's think about it and let's live by it. If you're not a Christian, we would encourage you to come to Christ. You can't buy the sacrifice that Jesus Christ made. His blood is worth more than anything on this earth. And what it wants to buy is worth more than anything, your soul. If you're not a Christian, we'd encourage you to come to Christ, believing that Jesus is the Son of God, repenting of your sins, being willing to confess His name, and being baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, to begin a life of having the things that are really valuable in life be most valuable to you and bringing you the joy and the happiness that can only come in God. If you are a Christian and for some reason have turned back to the world and the things of this world, we would encourage you as well to come back to the Lord while we stand and sing.